Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? Things are good here. Today, I am talking about the hummingbird method, which is, well, it's obscure. I will explain more when I get into it. But it is one of the ways I made progress in areas of my home that I've been avoiding during the whole crisis dehoarding that I talked about in last week's episode. So there's a magazine called Women Who Podcast, and it's all about podcasting and creativity and women who podcast. And I am thrilled to say that I am a featured podcaster in the January issue that has just come out, and I am indeed the front cover. So it's very exciting. I had an amazing chat with Kathy, who is the founder of the magazine. It's digital only, so no clutter for your home. If you would like to read a bit about me and other amazing women podcasters, go to womenwhopodcastmag.com. Go check it out. So when I was doing all that emergency de-hoarding for the electrical checking a few weeks ago, one of the things I really had to do was tackle areas that I've happily avoided for a really long time. And I had been able to legitimately avoid them because there were still other things I could do. And so it wasn't like I had de-hoarded and tidied everywhere else, so I could kind of get on with de-hoarding while still ignoring those particularly problematic areas. But then when I was faced with this electrician coming round, I knew that there were some of the areas I'd been avoiding that I would have to deal with, I would have to address. And there were different reasons for avoiding the different areas. But what's interesting is that for this topic, the reasoning behind the avoidance doesn't particularly matter. And I was using a technique without knowing that it was a thing. I just knew it was something that I have been able to utilize before. And then I read, what do you call them on Mastodon? Whatever a tweet is. A toot? Are they toots on Mastodon? I read a message, a post on Mastodon. And this person, I will link to them in the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk, described basically what I'd been doing and called it the hummingbird method. And then wrote a bit of a thread about the hummingbird method, which was taught to them by their therapist. And try as I might, and I'm pretty good at finding things online, try as I might, I could not find any other reference to it. So Abby Darling calls it the hummingbird method. Abby's therapist calls it the hummingbird method. But nobody else on the internet does. But now I call it the hummingbird method, and you can too. So I will read you what Abby Darling wrote. This is a thing I've discovered to help with tasks, especially as someone who deals with executive dysfunction from mental illness and PTSD. The hummingbird method. It's called hummingbirding because you're hovering over the task by being in the space the task is. Just say the thing is do the dishes. I spend time in the kitchen. Wipe benches, rearrange a cupboard, maybe bake cookies, etc. Eventually the dishes get done. It's sort of like sneaking up behind the thing by not thinking about it and just making sure I'm in the right place. I find it super helpful with writing for uni. Basically, I just make sure I open a Word doc and then start formatting it and playing with fonts, page numbers, all that stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm writing. I make sure I keep the doc open as well. So if I'm using my computer for other stuff, I can sneak in a few paragraphs really easy without it having to be a thing. Otherwise, I find that even when I'm super motivated to write, by the time Word opens finally, I've just lost it and meh. My therapist told me about it, and everyone else I've talked to who has used it has great results. So what Abby describes there is something that I have also been finding really useful. So say there is a particular corner of a room that I've been avoiding dealing with. Maybe it's because I don't know what's there. Maybe it's because I do know what's there and I don't want to have to deal with it. Whatever the reason, what I've been doing is rather than doing everything else to avoid dealing with that bit of the room, what I just find surprisingly helpful is I just plonk myself down in that bit of the room. And I might have my phone, I might have distractions, I might be doing something else, but I'm just kind of edging towards the thing. And what I tend to find is that once I'm there in the bit I've been studiously avoiding, sometimes for years, at some point I just start tinkering with the things I've been avoiding. Maybe I think, what is in that bag? I'm kind of intrigued now I'm up close. And so I will have a look. And then once I've had a look, I'll think, oh, that's quite interesting. Or, oh, I definitely don't want to keep that. That can go straight away. Or something like that. What Abby says, I really liked. It's sort of like sneaking up behind the thing by not thinking about it and just making sure I'm in the right place. So like a hummingbird, you're just hovering around, but in the same place. And if you've got barriers up about a particular, in my case, parts of your home, or if it's particular categories of stuff, or if it's a particular task, it's worth asking yourself whether there is a way to just exist in conjunction with that thing for a bit. Just exist in its aura for a bit. Just edge closer. Just do something else, but in that area. And I think part of it is like, the more I avoid something, the more I create a giant, giant issue with the thing I'm avoiding. So the more I avoid it, the more I think, well, it must be bad. If I haven't gone in that corner for 2 years, it must be really bad. Then another 2 years pass and I go, well, it must be terrifyingly bad if I haven't tackled that corner for 4 years. And so it kind of perpetuates in my head this idea that whatever I'm avoiding, there's a really good reason for me to be avoiding it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be avoiding it. And so it's a vicious cycle situation. And so I think part of why the hummingbird method is so helpful is that it demystifies that a bit. Because if one aspect of my problem is that I've been avoiding that space, I'm not avoiding that space anymore. I might not be dealing with what's in it, but suddenly I realize it's just a normal corner. It's just a corner, or it's just a pile, or it's just like every other corner or like every other pile. There's nothing special about it. It's just something else I've been avoiding. And the closer I get to, oh, maybe I can tackle it. Maybe there's nothing different about this pile to every other pile I've successfully tackled. Maybe just being near it demystifies it and takes some of that power away, that power coming from usually what my own mind has created over time. It's something about hovering over a task in quite a gentle way. You're not forcing yourself, you're just edging in, but persistently. It transforms it from a mountain I can't possibly climb to a hill that I probably can climb. Maybe slowly, maybe I'll be out of breath. When executive dysfunction in particular, or any kind of overwhelm, is tripping you up, it really can be an effective way of bashing down some of those barriers, but in a quite passive way, because it is really passive. You're not forcing anything. You're just being in the same area as whatever it is you think you can't do. Like, one of my friends got a kitten, and this kitten initially was very, very, very scared. And for about a week, hid under the sofa. And so my friend had to leave like food and water by the sofa because the kitten was not coming out. But they just left the kitten to it. And in week two, they started to occasionally see little whiskers peep out from under the sofa and occasionally see a little nose peep out. And then by week three, there were paws coming out, and this kitten was just gradually, slowly, gently expanding its own horizons just by like testing. Like, I have this very strict boundary. I cannot go out of the sofa. And then once you've stuck your nose out of the sofa, you realise that pushing that boundary a little bit, oh, that was fine. So you do it again just to make sure and it's fine. And then you stick a paw out, and then you, when it's dark and there's nobody around, you might stick your whole head out and just gradually, gradually nudge the boundaries and see that it's still fine and go a bit further. And now, of course, the kitten is absolutely out of control all over the curtains, all over everywhere. You would never have known that this mischievous thing was ever terrified and cowering. But it was by setting its own pace and realizing over time that it can exist in a slightly bigger world than it thought, and then a slightly bigger world again, and then a slightly bigger world again, until it was exploring the room, and then the house, and then the garden. And I've known kids with phobias about balloons. I've been to a lot of children's parties in my time, and children's parties tend to have balloons everywhere. And if you've got a lot of small kids who've been at a lot of children's parties, some of them have had the misfortune of being right next to a balloon when it popped. And that balloon popping gave them a big shock, and they didn't like it, and they cried, and they decided that balloons were the enemy. And then they turn up to the next children's party, and balloons are everywhere, and they don't want to go in, and they're scared. And then what tends to happen is that somebody says, okay, you don't have to come in, that's all fine. And then just gradually the kid sees all their friends having a good time and edges in and tests the waters, and it's okay. So they edge a bit closer, and they might even, if they're feeling really brave, end up right near balloons, and they're fine. Because they've tested the water and they've proven to themselves again and again that while balloons occasionally pop and it does make you jump and it's not very nice, mostly they're fine. And if they hadn't ventured into the party eventually, they would have left with the ongoing belief that balloons were terrifying. But by sidling up to balloons and being in their presence, they were able to prove to themselves that you can coexist with balloons peacefully. To misquote George W. Bush, who believed that human beings and fish could coexist peacefully.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
And this hummingbird method with dehoarding feels a bit like that. There with piles and areas that it wasn't even that I was, well, I was scared if I thought about tackling them, but it was more that I would just block them out. I would just almost, I got so used to not tackling them that it was like they didn't exist. And so then I was faced with a situation where I had to tackle them, and that was scary. And by sidling up to them, like the kid sidling up to a balloon, and then just existing, not testing it, not prodding it, not doing anything, just existing, eventually I could go, oh, it's just a bag of books. Or, okay, there was a spillage there, but I can deal with that. Just like the kid can go, okay, there are balloons and it's a bit unsettling, but there's games and toys and music and I can play. So using the hummingbird method is great for, as I've been talking about, those things you've been avoiding, but it's also great for procrastination of all sorts, like that the person I originally quoted uses it for their university work. They don't want to write the essay, but they open the Word document and they start messing about with fonts. And then at some point, something comes to them and they think, oh, that would be a good opening paragraph. And they just write it down. Like, I have a spreadsheet with all my ideas for any podcast episodes. And sometimes I'm overflowing with ideas and other times I get a bit stuck. And sometimes I'm really keen to record and other times maybe I'm not quite sure how I want to tackle a topic, or I'm not quite sure I'm equipped. I like lose confidence a bit. But quite often, just having that spreadsheet open on my computer means that at some point I'll start scrolling through my list of ideas and go, okay, I could talk about that actually. That would be a great topic. Perfect. So when you're procrastinating about a task, try the hummingbird method. Just plonk yourself into the general area where you would do that task, or set yourself up so that if you were going to do the task, you would be all set, but that's not your goal. So for instance, whenever I was doing this, I made sure that I always had rubbish bags around me. I would just set myself up in whatever area, doing whatever I was doing, but there would be rubbish bags, so that when I hopefully did start hovering around the task and approaching it a bit more directly, I would be all set. I wouldn't have to then go and look for whatever items I needed to equip me to carry out the task. It's great for overwhelm as well, which can be related to procrastination, but isn't always. A giant task is giant, and you don't know where to start, and it feels, you almost feel defeated before you start because it's so big. But sitting at the kitchen table when the kitchen table is what you want to be doing, is what you need to be dealing with, is the best way to position yourself to start dealing with the kitchen table. And it can be quite mindful as well. Just being near the thing you're scared of, near the thing you're overwhelmed by, near the thing you're putting off, near the thing you've been procrastinating about forever. You're just present. You're just mindful. You're just existing. And sometimes just existing is more than enough. And I'd be really interested to hear from you if you already use this kind of technique, or if you're listening and thinking, oh, I could do that slightly differently in this situation, because I really feel like there's something in this and that I'm only exploring a fraction of it. And I feel like it's got a lot of potential, but I'm learning alongside you. And this is something that really has a lot of promise. But I don't think it's true that we only use a tiny fraction of our brains, but it feels a bit like if that was true, there's so much potential there and I'm not seeing all of it. And so if you do have a similar approach, let me know, because it's applicable in a lot of tasks, whether it's de-hoarding, whether it's just ongoing tidying, taking rubbish out, that kind of thing. I think this method can be tailored to whatever concerns you've got. And if you're coming up with versatile uses for it, I would love to hear them. And like everything, like literally everything, this is not a method that will fix everything. There isn't one fix for any of this. There isn't one fix for most problems in the world, but it's all about having a toolbox and having a selection of tools in it. And so when you're facing a particular problem, you can look in your toolbox of hacks and strategies and tips and think either, oh, I know what's helped before with this particular problem, that's the tool I need. Or think, oh, I'm not sure what the answer is here, I will pick one and try it, and it might help. Sometimes all we can do is something that might help. And because there aren't guarantees, there is a lot of trial and error in de-hoarding. And being flexible, approaching things with flexibility, whether that is tools to help, whether it's your stuff itself, whether it's your beliefs about your stuff, it really helps. Because when we are rigid in the way we think, when we are rigid in the way we behave, when we are rigid in our beliefs about our stuff, and we dig our heels in and there is no moving us from our position, we stay stuck. That whole thing of, if you keep doing what you've always done, you keep getting what you've always got. Something I've had to do a lot of work on is tackling some of that rigidity in my own beliefs, because much as I always felt very justified in my beliefs, it got to a point where I had to realize that, justified or not, those beliefs and behaviors and thought patterns were keeping me stuck. If I wasn't willing to even test out challenging them, if I wasn't willing to try anything different, then it was impossible for anything to change. Because I was so aware that with this hoarding, I got myself into this position. And those inflexible beliefs and behaviors and thought patterns were a good part of why I was stuck. And so in order to change my surroundings, I had to start testing some of those very firm boundaries I had around, this is what I do in this situation. This is what I do with this kind of item. This is what I do with items I feel like this about. And it's been so hard. It's been an absolute departure, but it's been so freeing. And that's not to say it's not scary. It's not to say it's not... venturing into the unknown is always a bit bewildering and a bit frightening. Also, it opens up the possibility of things being different in a way that staying with your heels dug in doesn't. And just like I have spent years saying, I cannot tackle that corner, I just can't. I will do this and I will do that and I will do the other, but I will not go near that corner. I was ultimately able to tackle several of those corners by using the hummingbird method, by just being, just sitting down in that corner and being for a bit. And that was already a departure from my inflexible behaviour and inflexible thinking. And then by using that method and just hovering around that area, I was also able to do something about the piles that I'd been so dreading, and that in nearly every case were nowhere near as bad as I had built them up to be in my head. And every time that happened, that was like another tick in the box for doing things differently to the way you've always done them can be really powerful in a really positive way. And so the initial rule was, I don't go over there. And then by going over there, I ultimately tackled the next rule, which was, I definitely don't delve into that stuff. And I delved into that stuff. And then that challenged the things I've been putting off for so long must be absolutely terrifying, because they really weren't. And so it's all about having this selection of things and just trying stuff out. Just experiment. Just see. You might be thinking, that would never work for me. I haven't gone in the cellar for 20 years. and there's no way I'm starting now. But I thought that about these corners. Maybe just open the cellar door. Maybe just start there. And have a think about where you can hover that will just break down some of the barriers about something you've been scared of, or that you're overwhelmed by, or that you're putting off, or that you think is impossible. Let me know how you get on. I make this podcast because I think it's important. I started it as an outlet for myself, but it's become much more than that. And I hear from people all the time about how listening to me talk about my experience and interview specialists and experts is helping them. Hearing those stories makes the time and cost absolutely worth it. But if you want to help to ensure that the future of the podcast is sustainable, you can donate to help with costs. To send a one-off or recurring donation, just go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/donate. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So shout out this week to the Financial Confessions podcast, which I will link to in the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Here is guest Paige Pritchard talking with the host of the Financial Confessions podcast, and they have some really good advice.
And I think similarly, like when you're in the store looking at buying a certain thing, like take a second to think about like, what do the models in the ad look like? Like, what does the store smell like? What is it lit like? Like, how are things being designed to trick me into wanting things that I didn't even want to in the first place? And I think like, until we can really interrogate that with every aspect of our consumer life, like, we'll never truly be able to break free from these things because we're still playing like an inherently rigged game, essentially.
Absolutely. I always say all the time, I'm like, look, we're all like super smart. We're all super capable, but we're not as smart or as capable as the marketers and the retailers, because it's just impossible to be. They have teams of hundreds of people. They spend millions upon millions upon millions of dollars just trying to understand you, like on a deep psychological level, to get you to spend money that you wouldn't have spent otherwise, and to get you to spend more each shopping trip than you would have spent otherwise. And so I think it's also just kind of knowing, like, most marketing is packaged in a way and framed in a way of like, oh, we love you, we're trying to help you, you know, like you're so valuable to us. But it's all just designed to get you to spend money, whether it's Kohl's cash, Old Navy's cash, whether you're, you know, it's an email that you get of like, oh, we haven't seen you in a while. We miss you. Come back. Here's 20% off your next purchase. Like, that's how it's framed to you. It's framed to you like, we love you, like we care about you, come back. But that's not the case.
It's worth remembering, isn't it? Okay. Thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen from the I'm Mom So Hard podcast.
Now listen, we don't want to brag, but yes, we are moms. We're average moms.
Below average sometimes.
But we're not just moms.
Yeah, we don't want you to think that we're just moms. And we're not just supermodels either. We're not just pieces of meat.
That's right. We're not even close.
Yeah.
But we are comedians and we're also best friends.
We're also best-selling authors.
And television writers.
We created a viral web series.
With over 300 million views.
Okay,
what's up?
Bragging.
Who's bragging?
That is bragging,
and we were
actually
in our swimsuits. Again, not supermodels.
We're also podcasters.
Are we podcasting right now?
Not right now, but we have been podcasting for 3 years. We're bringing laughs every Tuesday to women and moms everywhere.
And one dude who's a sophomore in college. His name's Greg. Whatever, he messaged us and made me feel cool.
So nice. Amazing. Please listen to the I'm Mom So Hard podcast on Acast.
Woo!
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.